hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Third period, last game in the playoffs, too. Oh, take me where the hockey players face off down the rink. And the Stanley Cup is all filled up for the champs who win the drink. Now the final flick of a hockey stick and a one gigantic scream. The puck is in, the home team wins the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey,
good old
game,
hockey game
is the best game you can
play. Oh, man, like I said, it's tough to have this conversation with Sam Pinjanovich, WGN Sports, as we talk off-season instead of the second round of the playoffs after last night's a heartbreaking loss to the St. Louis Blues as the Chicago Blackhawks, the defending champions, are out of this year's Stanley Cup playoffs. Sam, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I teased it. Might as well get right into it. First time in 7 years that the United Center won't have a playoff game in the month of May.
Whoa!
For either sport. So I don't know what to do with myself because I have spent Mays and Junes, and you've got two teams there. You got the Bulls and the Hawks.
Yeah, right.
Both teams will not play a May playoff game for the first time since 2008.
That's crazy. And so in 2008, they both, yeah, I guess
both, they both missed. The Bulls missed the playoffs, and I believe the Hawks missed the playoffs, too.
I was going to say.
Or they might have made it and lost to Detroit in the first round.
I hope the United Center can get a hold of, on short notice, Disney on Ice and get them in there for a quick run.
I've got friends in the elevator business over at United Center, swear to God. And they're excited because every year they're like, man, I got the Hawks, I got the Bulls. You know, we're going to be working through June.
Yeah.
No, not this year.
I'm sure there's an economic story in there somewhere about
all the guys who do the floors are now going to work for Luna.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, man, can we install some wood floors for you?
So it's strange to me. 2008 is the last time. And, I mean, both teams had failures of seasons. I'm tired of hearing that the Blackhawks had a great season because, you know, they finished in third and lost in the first round. To them, that's not success. When your marketing brand is one goal, and they'll be the first ones to admit this.
Yeah, they'll tell you that.
This year's a failure. And the Bulls, that's a monstrosity failure.
Okay, well, let's start with the Hawks because, you know, they had such an up-and-down season. They had times where they had streaks. There were a lot of, you know, Patrick Kane had a huge streak. There was also the streak where they won a, you know, they won 11 in a row, 12 in a row. But they also showed times where they were just down and out, where they were getting beat by obviously inferior teams. They were inconsistent. A lot of what we sort of set up at the beginning of the year was, well, maybe they don't have the talent. They shipped Brandon Saad. They shipped a lot of other people out. You know, and you know, and brought people together, and they piecemealed a team. But all along, the storyline was maybe they don't have enough to compete for a defense of the Stanley Cup, and it kind of proved true.
Yeah, they had lost guys in years past, but I think this departure from the 2015 Cup winning team was the most responsible, most experienced group of guys they lost. I mean, to lose Johnny Oduya and Patrick Sharp. I mean, those two guys. Would you like to have them right now? I mean, they're freewheeling and dealing in Dallas right now. Sharp looks like he's 5 years younger. And Oduya is on that blue line. They're so solid in Dallas. So you lost some guys. Brandon Saad was a power forward that you just don't have right now. I mean, Richard Ponick was playing alongside Taves and Kane. So I think the depth as a whole just wasn't there. I also think mental and physical fatigue goes into trying to repeat to win the toughest trophy in sports. I mean, it's been done, I think, one time since 1990. And that was the Red Wings in 97, 98. I think that's right. So the hardest trophy to win in sports is the Stanley Cup. It's even harder to win it 2 years in a row. And I looked at the numbers. Since the lockout was lifted in 13, Chalmerson has played 362 games.
Yeah.
Seabrook, 361.
Right. It's amazing.
I mean, it's just the mental and physical toll.
It did seem that, you know, you were seeing much more sort of fatigue on the defensive side. They were playing, obviously shorter rotations, but it was... You know, last year I think we were talking about Duncan Keith for he was MVP because he logged so many minutes. They tried that same sort of formula. They're playing really just three defensemen, and you could tell there were some of the plays on the defensive side of, you know, not being able to clear the puck, turning the puck over.
It was turnovers and penalties.
It was amazing to me. I mean, even in the last goal, that was just a straight up I mean, I forgot who it was because
Gustafson was
just got checked. Yeah, and then it was like, what are you doing? But you saw that throughout the whole series. It wasn't, you know, that the Blackhawks were necessarily outplayed, but they definitely were shorthanded or just didn't have it on the defensive side.
Yeah, Patrick Kane had talked about this after Game 7 in St. Louis about that they kept putting themselves behind the eight ball. They kept falling into holes. In the series, they fell in a hole. They'd fall down 2-0 in a game. They'd fall down 3-1. Eventually, it was just too much to overcome. And yet, at the same time, your captain doesn't score a goal. The best player in the world scores one goal, and you lost in Game 7 in the third period on the road. So that shows you just how close they really were. Depleted as they may be, as exhausted as they may be, and it's mental and physical, and you'll hear now exactly in the next coming days and weeks just who was hurt and what happened. But it's a lot of hockey over a short period of time, and the breaks didn't go their way. I mean, they hit double post twice in the same series.
Yeah.
They lost Game 4. Ladd hit left-right crossbar, and then Seabrook in Game 7, post-to-post. Close. That doesn't happen once in a series.
It is interesting, I mean, because as much as it's terrible for the Blackhawks, for Blackhawks fans, I mean, it really is a two-month difference. They're going to get this, you know, they're now effectively, they start a little bit of a vacation or an off season where, you know, they get a little bit more rest because they have been coming off these sort of like late June after the parties, late June. And then they're back in.
Oh, so, they party through July. You don't get it twisted. They win the cup in the middle of June. So, that thing's going around the world.
Let me ask you, I mean, off season, they're already talking about sort of, you know, we are still at a point where there's salary cap issues for the Chicago Blackhawks. The big players are signed up, but do we have the same sort of turnover that we had in years past?
You won't have the amount of players, but you'll have significant players. And as you mentioned, when you have guys like Kane, Taves, Crawford, Seabrook, Keith, Hossa, Hjalmarsson, and Anisimov locked up for a handful of years, you have to now balance that check. But you can't pay everybody millions of dollars.
Right.
So now it's guys like Andrew Shaw, who made $2 million this year. He's a free agent. Dale Weiss, who you just traded for at the deadline. You traded a really good player in Philippe Danault. Probably not going to have money for Dale Weiss. You know, you've got down the road, you know, Richard Panik. Are you going to be able to afford him? And then Teuvo Teravainen. Can you afford him? Because the Panarin bonus kicks in now. Because Panarin had X amount of points. He was top 10 in forwards. He's going to get like $1.5 million in bonus that they weren't expecting. And the worst part of the Hawks situation is the Brian Bickell contract.
Still,
that's where that bites him, because that's the worst contract that they have on this team. He's going to make $4 million next year and probably not even play in the pros. And they buried him this year in Rockford,
right?
But that money still counts.
That's tough to have that kind of money and on a player that didn't even.
Yeah,
didn't
I mean, you thought you gave him the huge contract after the 13th.
And he's a name. I mean, he's a name, but you see this a lot. You see it more in hockey where players, they just lose their step or something happens. They fall out of favor with the organization. They're gone, but the contract still remains.
I forgot to mention Andrew Ladd, who they traded for.
Right.
They got rid of Marco Dano. So Ladd's probably gone. I mean, he's going to sign for $4 or $5 million. So you don't have room for everybody, but you've got to find guys. This is where the scouting department comes in handy. And your player development, you get guys that are 21, 2, and 3, bring them up, hope that they can turn into something. But the goal is, with these guys locked up, you're not trying to win in 2 or 3 years. You're trying to win this year. You're trying to win now.
Sam Panjanovich is our guest tonight from WGN Radio Sports. Okay, so you know what? Let's take a quick break. We come back. We got to talk about the Chicago Bulls.
I brought my shovel to bury the Bulls.
I feel like we haven't really had the post-mortem on the team.
No.
Because they did that so quick, and they got in and they got out.
On a Friday.
They news-dumped it against a ton of other sports news. So we'll continue the conversation with Sam about the Chicago Bulls up next.
Basketball, Chi-Town, WGN Kaufman. Who won't stop me?
So download here on WGN.
Is that an original?
That was an original, and I have to say that we were going to be playing that. I thought we'd be playing that into late May, Memorial Day, you know, where it's just like, Game 6 tonight! The Cleveland Cavaliers and Chicago Bulls!
No,
will
now
this be Derrick Rose, Kyrie Irving? Oh,
no. Instead, you got the Raptors and the Pacers. Grr.
I've been saying it the whole night. I mean, watching NBA basketball first round action is excruciating. There is no good basketball
it's
happening.
Bad.
There are bad teams in the playoff. The Miami Heat and the Charlotte Hornets. Come on. You know, so I mean, talk about this. I mean, what happened for a Chicago Bulls team to not make it into the Eastern Conference playoffs?
Do you have – we need at least an hour. I'll give you the shortened version. I was playing Operation the last hour, so I've been operating on that poor little plastic guy. The leadership in general just completely went south. And you had a guy in Jimmy Butler, good player, solid player, maybe a max contract player. That's what he got. I don't know if he's worth every penny, but he's up there. All he did all year was talk about becoming a leader. And he was vocal about wanting to be the leader. Well, then lead the damn team. He comes out 25 games in, calls out the head coach, says he's not coaching hard enough. And then, you know, he's not playing well, and he's blaming injuries. And then there's the Derek thing, and then Joakim Noah gets pulled out of the starting lineup for Pau Gasol. And you just had a lot of egos, and a lot of them got truncated this year. And the decision to fire Tom Thibodeau remains one of the worst decisions in the history of the franchise. I mean, you fired a coach that went to the playoffs wow. 5 years in a row, regardless of if you didn't like him or not. The guy never missed the playoffs in the East.
And to be honest, I mean, what they tried to do was to do this move, not unlike they did in Golden State, where, you know, they're at a point where they're a playoff team, but we need to make a move to a finals team. And Fred Hoiberg was supposed to do that, but we've seen this regression. Does that at all impact the direction of this team? Because they have guys on this team, veterans, max contract here, mid-level guys here. The whole point to be competitive with the Cleveland Cavaliers to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. Now with this move where they don't make the playoffs, are we talking rebuild?
You have to do something. You have to shake it up. If I can do so, though, before we get into this, I have a clip. I brought a piece of audio in my pocket, and I just gave it to Pete. So this is why you should be upset, because it's not just about missing the playoffs. This was the expectation that was placed upon this team. Pete, go ahead and let that run.
Derek, there have been people in the national media back here, back row, that have thought that this team, because of health concerns, only has X amount of years left, that the window may be closing. I assume you disagree with that. What does that make you think?
This is my first time hearing about it. I don't try to look into it. I try my hardest to stay away from it. But we know we have an opportunity ahead of us. It may not be this year. It may not be the next year or whatever. But I know that we have one. I know I'm going to win the championship soon.
Okay.
You could do that with any of the players, right?
No.
I'm going to win a championship soon.
No, but to say that. And this is a guy that told you he was going to win the MVP, and then he won the MVP in 2011. So you hinge on to what he says. They get bounced early to the Cavaliers that season. The very next year,
when was this?
Media Day 2014. I asked Derrick Rose that question.
Right, okay.
So this is August 2014.
You sound so young. You sound so young.
I do sound a little older.
Yeah.
So that year they get bounced early. The next year they miss the playoffs. When is soon? I know I'm going to win a championship soon. And he said, I don't know if it's this year or next year or whatever. We're in the whatever phase.
All right, let's talk about that contract, because Derrick Rose obviously played. He had spurts we talked about on this program where you're like, you know, quietly he's leading the team in points or he's performing at a high level and that the team is just not there. As a texter for 847 just said, you know, the problem is no teamwork. You saw that where Derrick Rose would go off for 30, 35 points and yet they'd still lose by 15. But I mean, is there any way in your mind that Derrick Rose is the guy that they point the blame to, and they ship him out of town this summer?
He's not the best player on a championship team going forward because he's just physically limited. I think mentally he's a little off. He doesn't crash the rim with reckless abandon anymore, and he shouldn't because he wants to stay healthy and stay on the floor and make some money, as he's coined very famously. You know, it's about my next contract and all that. So he's playing a little bit more passive, and you understand that. That being said, you got to do something else, get somebody that's going to take this team to the next level. And they thought it was Jimmy Butler and Pau Gasol, and that answer hasn't been concrete.
Who's gone? Who's gone? Well, is Pau Gasol gone?
Gasol is up. Noah is up. Rose is up after next year.
So that's trading deadline kind of talk when you say if this is a rebuild, they can get rid of him as a rental player.
I don't know what the plan is, Justin. That's the thing, because they told you before the year, Gar Forman said, the GM of this team said, this is a championship team.
Did they still believe that?
They can't. I mean,
did
they not
watch? Did they say that? They said, oh, this is terrible. We missed the playoffs.
No, they did nothing. They said everybody's job is going to be, we're all going to hold everybody accountable. Uh-huh. Yeah, and then the owner sends an email and everything kind of just, they just goes to the wayside and we forget about it. Expectations planted on this team from the get-go to where they finish, the disparity between point A and point B is probably the worst it's ever been. Now, you can recover from that. It's not the end of the world. But, I mean, they got a slap on the wrist to get nobody fired. Nobody changes jobs.
They have weight, just from looking at the squad and looking what's out there right now, they obviously have a roster problem where they have too many power forwards. You've got Bobby Portis, who was drafted as a power forward, when you already had Pau Gasol, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson. You know, I'm sure I'm forgetting other players.
There's
in that
a couple
mix.
More
There's
power couple forwards forward, in there.
But Mirotić plays that position. I mean, he can swing that way. So
Mirotić plays defense like one of those revolving doors at Starbucks.
It seems to me like they just have a glut of power forwards. I mean, do you see in the offseason, you know, moving a couple of guys? Instead of just saying letting Noah walk or letting Gasol walk, can they move, put something together, package something together, and try to find a strength that maybe center or maybe point guard, something that's a little different than what they have now?
You've got to find guys to play defense. If you can't stop anybody, good luck. And a lot of times this year, you know, the point guard comes on, he gets past Rose, and then Gasol is caught on an island. I mean, there's like three guys making mistakes on every possession.
Right.
So you've got to find guys that buy in defensively, that get stops to create offense, because right now everybody's running down the floor and shooting jump shots.
Yeah.
And
works for Golden State.
Well, they make them. If you make the jump shots, it's easier.
And they do play defense on that.
When you miss the jump shots and then, you know, it's a 3-on-1 the other way.
I'm sorry I'm jumping all over.
No,
but, you know,
it's fine.
It made me think about, you know, when I think of Golden State, I think about that bench. When Steph Curry comes out of the game and Klay Thompson comes out of the game, you've got Andre Iguodala. You got guys who come in and they lead. They remind me of, what was that called? That's right, the bench mob, where they came. Remember those Thibodeau teams? It was like you felt like even Derrick Rose
Ronnie
would sit
Brewer
down and those guys would come
Kyle
in and they
Korver,
would shut it down. And
Taj
there was
Gibson,
Taj Gibson, and they had like an identity.
Kirk Heinrich.
They had an identity. It didn't seem like anyone coming
this
off the
bench.
This
team doesn't have one. This team doesn't have an identity, and that was the problem all season long. They didn't know what they wanted to be, and they were caught in transition, and that happens when you change coaches and philosophies, and you go from a defensive team that wants to be the first to 90 to a guy that wants to come out and score 115, 120. The game changes. You have to adjust, and at this point in time, you cannot say that the decision has worked out. And now Tom Thibodeau gets five new shiny toys in Minnesota.
Speaking of Minnesota,
that is the team. Oh,
so
goodness.
So Tibbs is going to Minnesota. He's got amazing talent, rookie talent, which is not a good fit for the coach we know.
You think
he's not
he
gonna
has
like
learned
young guys.
A
yeah.
little bit?
But you know, I thought about this, and again, I'm no expert, and I don't have any background in salary caps and whatever. But you know, that team is missing one piece, a driving point guard. Is there any way?
Are you trying to unload Derek?
I'm saying, is there any way that Derek Rose and Coach Thibodeau could have a reunion in some sorts, and that could benefit the Chicago Bulls?
I know Tibbs would take him. I don't know if the money's going to line up. I don't know how much the Bulls would pay or expect you to pay, but that's certainly a scenario that would work. I know Tom and Derek have a good history together. I know Derek likes Tom. There's never really been a problem
there.
I
guess I could say that about any of those core players, Joakim Noah, Pau Gasol. I mean, anyone would want to go play for
Probably not Pau. Pau's more concerned with going to the opera now.
Right.
Pau's cool.
Noah seemed to love.
Well, Noah can't stay on the floor.
Yeah.
I think Derek's going to play out the contract. I don't think he gets traded. And then at the end of the year, you've got a lot of teams with some money. Lakers.
All right.
Knicks.
I love it. Phil Jackson. And there's just, it's almost like we become fans of, I just want to see where some of these players end up and succeed, because there was some tremendous excitement around that team, the bench mob teams, the team where Derrick Rose was the MVP. And we just want to get back there. Maybe this team can't and they need to rebuild, but I do have a soft spot in my head or my heart for Taj, for Derek, for Joakim Noah, for Ronnie Brewer.
Hey,
bring Ronnie back.
Hey, I know they're going to win a championship soon. That's what I was told. I'm a White Sox fan now.
Speaking of, let's take a break for the news. Sammy, stick around.
Oh, sure.
Let's talk about baseball, because the Cubs and Sox are not just winning their divisions.
They're first.
They're winning the league. They're top of their leagues. Both of these teams are on fire. Both, I mean, Chris Sale lights out tonight, beats the Toronto Blue Jays 2 in a row. We'll talk about the Cubs and the Sox, the positive stories here in Chicago after the news. Stay with us.
One ball, one strike, one out, one run. That kid at the bat, and the kid's what he done. Hit the ball in the back, and the bat in the ball. You should have heard them fans all squall. It's going, it's going. This time it's really gone.
Right now in Chicago baseball, it's like the montage in The Natural when they start to win. You know, and every day, like, the newspaper circles in, and it's like, 4-1. Man, you know, like, whatever the team was, like, they beat the Indians 3-2. Like, 2 games out of first. That's what it's like in Chicago baseball, both sides of town. Sam Panjanovic, WGN Sports here.
That song reminds me of The Sandlot, though. That song brought me back to childhood, running down the street with your baseball bat, with your glove over the end of the bat, and you're running to the park so you can make it there by 12 o'clock.
This is how you draw up fandom in Chicago. Both squads winning at the same time, and not just winning, you know, oh, it's nice to be 500. Both of these teams are dominating right now.
White Sox win 10-1 tonight in Toronto, 15-6, 2 games up on Kansas City. The Cubs currently up 4-3 on the Brewers. The Cubs are 14-5. They've got a 3.5-game lead on the Pirates. So both teams in first. I think it's more important that the White Sox got off to a strong start than anything else, because the Cubs have kind of already been through it last year. This Sox thing has been a mess for, I don't know, 4 out of 5 years now, and it's good to finally have some new players. They're having fun, and winning is contagious. Success is contagious. When you bring in guys that have won elsewhere into this new situation, new clubhouse, new guys, new manager.
I said it all along. Adam
LaRoche.
It's a
big deal.
Adam LaRoche was the problem.
Oh, take you and your weirdo kid. Get out of my sight. I'm so tired of this guy. And then he's like, we're only going to do exclusives with Oprah.
Right.
You know?
That's what I said.
And
I
then
said
he told,
even before LaRoche Gate, I was like, that's the problem right there.
He told ESPN, the magazine, well, I understand where they're coming from. No, you don't!
No,
you don't understand
you
anything.
Don't. So, but the White Sox are winning in a way that they've wanted to win for the last couple of years. Strong pitching. They're finally made the right moves. In a weird way, and I joke with Adam LaRoche, but it opened the door for Austin Jackson, who's played a pretty great role for the White Sox defensively. They've been able to move Adam Eaton to right field and move Avi Garcia to DH, which is huge because he's not the greatest right fielder, and he wasn't last season. Todd Frazier at third base has changed the makeup of that left. Jimmy Rollins is a resurgence. So it seems like all the moves that were made in the offseason are clicking.
Last year they couldn't hit. They couldn't field. They couldn't pitch. They couldn't catch.
They couldn't manage.
They couldn't throw anybody out.
Right.
The outfield defense was awful. They've fixed 4-5 of those areas right now. The only knock on the team as it is the team average. I mean, Frazier's at 222,
yeah,
Jackson 219, Abreu 190. That being said, it's April, it's 40 degrees,
right.
It's Chicago, so you would imagine that those players are going to find their grooves through May and June. They are the number one bullpen in baseball. Fielding percentage-wise, they're in the top 5, and Chris Sale's 5-0, Matt Latos is 4-0.
Wow. What a start. Okay, on the other side, much higher expectations for the Chicago Cubs. I mean, obviously, that team, they sort of were anointed at the beginning of the season as World Series favorites. They're not letting up. I mean, they had the Kyle Schwarber injury, which was something that really, like, it's just like, here comes the curse. I saw Pete or hide underneath the desk as Kyle Schwarber news came out. But I mean, they didn't miss a beat. They were able to shift some stuff. Joe Maddon's working wonders. That team just every night comes out and it feels like they're going to win.
You got too many good bats in that lineup, and it's hard to get all those guys out over the course of a game. I mean, they get 3-4 at bats. Eventually, they're going to take advantage of your mistake.
But I mean, I would say Jake Arrieta and John Lester. I mean, they're
well,
Arrieta
too.
1-2 punch in baseball right now.
Right, but they're outscoring you. They're scoring 7, 8, right. 9, 10 runs. You know,
it's great for John Lackey.
Yeah, it's good for John Lackey. Hendricks has actually been pretty solid. But yeah, Arrieta. I mean, what more can you say? And everybody that either had a take or wrote on it in a paper or a blog or whatever, well, there's no way he could do what he's doing it. He's better than he was last year. And did you see what he told reporters that people are accusing him of taking steroids?
Right, right.
And he says that is he's flattered by that. He thinks that that's awesome that people think he's taking roids. He's not. Because they test for it.
I was going to say they test for it, and I just a curiosity. How does steroids help a pitcher?
It doesn't. It wouldn't help you
Roger
throw
Clemens,
strikes.
I guess, right?
It would add MPH on your fastball.
And that's not really his thing, though.
But well, he throws hard. But I don't want to even talk about this. He's not doing roids.
His breaking ball and the
his control.
To
he
get
doesn't,
guys
doesn't walk
out
guys.
On the corner is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and his slider cutter combo with the heater with the changeup. His mechanics have been fixed. They are top of the line, and he's a fitness freak. I mean, he's drinking smoothies with turmeric in them, like you know grandfathers do. He's just like so ahead of the curve.
Well, let me bring
that.
Pete Zimmerman in on this because this is a question I posed earlier. Well, he's got a nightmare, and he had a nightmare woke him up the other day. But I posed this earlier, you know, in the carryout, just about you know, is it too early to say that Jake Arrieta may be the best pitcher in Chicago Cubs history? I mean, I'm not talking like 1920s type guys. I mean, in recent history from Fergie Jenkins on.
I mean, two no-hitters. That's pretty, I mean, you know, got Mil Pappas, you know, God rest his soul,
cards,
you know,
right?
Just passed away last week. But he wasn't a Cub for his entire career. I guess neither was Arrieta, but I don't know.
I mean, as a Cubs fan, as a diehard, I mean, just think of it as Arrieta up there with, and forget about stats, just think about just the heart, the feel.
You
think
there
of Greg Maddux and Rick Sutcliffe?
Fergie
at this point?
Jenkins, possibly.
Maybe I don't know. Not yet.
Really?
I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean Sutcliffe had 1 year on the Cubs that was really bad.
Yeah,
the half a year,
16-1,
and then he never really was able to replicate that. And Fergie Jenkins, I mean his career was tremendous, you know, and you never saw him do the kind of things that Arrieta's doing on the mound right now.
And the two guys that were planned to be the Hall of Famers, I mean, they thought they had the 1-2 punch for 10, 15 years when they had Wood and Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those were supposed to be the guys, not to bring that up, but that was supposed to be, you know, the core of guys that finally got a World Series. Those two were supposed to be on the mound for games 1 and 2, and it just didn't work out.
Now, it may be premature. Obviously, we're sports talking here and the idea of what Jake Arrieta's career, because he's, you know, if he wins a World Series, it's no doubt he's the best pitcher in Cubs
ever.
History. But, but obviously, his over the last 24 starts, I mean, it's baseball legend, not just Cubs legend. It's baseball. I've never seen anything like it.
Better than Bob Gibson.
He hasn't lost at Wrigley since June of 2015. And the game that he was it,
that's amazing.
Was it? Yeah, it was 15. And the game he lost, the Phillies, Cole Hamels threw a no-hitter.
Right.
So that it took a no-hitter to beat him.
Well, let's wrap on the your nightmare scenario.
Sure.
Yeah, we were on
vacation. He's scratching his face.
I know. I just thinking about it. We were in Mexico last week for vacation, and it was really hard to get any type of internet or whatever, but I checked my phone and I saw, you know, Jake Arrieta pitching the no hitter. I'm like, oh, gotta tune in. So, you know, clicked on Sirius to listen to the game. And it's really funny because the internet would go out and you don't really realize in baseball because there's long pauses.
Right.
So you're sitting there for like 2 minutes.
Right.
Wait a minute, what's going on? So like all going to bed all excited, Arrieta pitches the no hitter, blah blah blah. I don't know, like 3 or 4 in the morning, wake up in the sweat. And I had the dream that the Cubs are going to go all the way, make it to the World Series, and then lose to the White Sox.
that's
and it's possible.
At this point, I mean, the it's only been 20 games. I love Chicago. I love this town.
Cold sweat in Mexico on vacation.
We're 20 games in, and the Kansas City Royals are so quiet. It's the quietest team in baseball history where they're like, they're at the same rate, and nobody's talking about the defending World Series champs. They're what, a game back to the White Sox?
I think it's 2 now. By the way, I know we're going to get moving here, but I don't know how much Hawk Harrelson you've watched or seen.
I haven't.
We haven't had this conversation. Opening series in Oakland, some Oakland guy smokes a ball to deep. Like, this ball is crushed, 450 feet. And Hawk's like, there's a can of corn. And it's gone.
It's gone. Oh.
And I literally, like, I thought I had too many vodkas. I thought there's no way he just said that.
Is that just homerism on his part where he's like, he won't recognize a
homer
ball?
This ball landed 10 rows up in the upper deck. Hawk, like, all right, say what you want about Hawk. Hawk can't see anymore. He can't see. Candy corn.
No, I like that. I think it's more. I think it's strategic. I think it's mental.
It's
he's
awesome.
Playing mental games with the Oakland fans.
Canicorn.
Canicorn.
4:30.
I was wrong. Home run. That's great. That's great. All right, Sam Penjanovic, good to see you, buddy. Thanks for talking Chicago sports. Huge, huge time. Obviously, it's going to be baseball specific, but we've got the NFL draft. We didn't even talk about the Bears. We'll talk about that later this week. Good to see you, buddy.
You got it.